Hey, today we're looking at, and Paul is going to take us, he felt the need to talk about family. He's got a few verses on family in Colossians. It's an interesting corner turn. He's going to talk about marriage, he's going to talk about children, in one verse. We're going to flop over to Ephesians to look also, because he, for some reason, felt compelled to tell more in Ephesians to the church at Ephesus than he did at the church at Colossae. Don't know why. But the interesting thing is, he could not possibly have known that this would be all put together in a book called the Bible. To him, these were just letters he was used by God to send out. So it's not really redundant. They elaborate more on it. But we get to see in this, if we hear it right, we get to see that there are roles we play in the marriage. There are things we're supposed to do in a marriage that we're not really taught to do. You may have seen it in your home, but you're not really taught to do it. And in this picture here, it's really the picture of any team. It's been interesting to be an interim pastor in 22 churches, because there are churches where I, right out of the box, having a staff meeting, and there have been many churches that didn't have any women in the executive planning meetings. And I remember saying to a church I was at recently, you're kidding me, right? 70% of the people in church are female, and you don't have females in these meetings? And bringing in the ladies. But there have been churches where basically the lead guy sits there, has sat there and said, this is what we're doing. And he's got 8 or 9 others in the room that are smart and getting input and agreeing to disagree. And I remember having staff meetings probably 20 years ago, and a new guy on staff would come out of the business world and had a very hard time with how aggressive the women were in the meeting, and how disagreeing, and me having to say to them, well, let's go get some lunch. They have brains. We need to hear this. And honestly, if it wasn't for staff, a lot of the stuff we do here that God has blessed us with, I would have voted against. The Goliath gauntlet seems stupid to me. And, you know, talking about it, and hey, maybe we'll get 300 people in this obstacle run, and maybe we'll make $30,000. And they got my heart when they said, we'll bring pagans on the property. And okay, let's give it a shot. And then watching, we get close to 2,000 on the property and $250,000. And I have to come back in later and say, I was wrong again. But input is so important, and we're going to look at that because we misinterpret some of what this is all about in here. And I'm going to begin in Genesis where the marriage began. It says, then the Lord said, it is not good for the man to be alone. I will make him a helper who is just right for him. Now, there's so much in this in the NLT translation, but all the translations use the word helper. That doesn't mean somebody under him. In fact, some translate helper as a rescuer. It's not good for man to be alone. I'm going to send him a rescuer. And the bottom line is, who is just right for him. And we're going to look at marriage today. Whether you're married or not is not important. There are people that you know, non-believers or believers or family members. We need to have information on marriage. We need to know how to do it. They want to ask somebody, help me with this. My wife and I aren't getting along, or whatever. We're the ones that need to know all about the marriage. And just right for him is so perfect, because about a year after you got married, you realized you married your opposite. And you didn't, look at everybody nodding their heads, that's hilarious. And you didn't realize it when you were dating. And honestly, I didn't date with my brains, I dated with my eyes. Wow. And I think it's the master of God to draw us in, because we are visual beings, they're emotional beings, and then you get married, and then you realize, how could we be so different? Am I being punished for something I did in high school? I mean, we're gonna see it's different by design. We're supposed to be different. We're supposed to be different. I'm going to send him a helper. And then it goes on. And the four points of the marriage are this. This is why a man leaves his father and mother. And this is one of the most fun places, to be quite honest with you, to be doing marriage counseling, because of the Latin community. And the Latin community, they are awesome. I've never seen parents like Latin parents. And I've told you this before. If we're interviewing an Anglo boy to come in here, we can go in a little room back there because it's just a mom or a mom and a dad. We're interviewing a Latin child boy, and uncles show up sometimes. It's kind of amazing sometimes how many went all in. But here's the hard part and the difficult part for a marriage. And he grows up and goes out the door, and he kind of takes mom with him. And how many times have I heard a wife say, our shower door isn't working. This is unbelievable to me. She calls and tells my husband, her son, her shower door is not working. And he's out the door over there fixing her shower door when ours still isn't working right here. And it's just fun to watch the dynamics. This is why a man leaves his father and mother, in other words, as priority, and is united to his wife. United. And they become one flesh. That's not a sexual reference. If it was a sexual reference, it would be, and they became one flesh that night. Over a period of years, two very different people, years and years and decades, become one, filling each other in. Now, if we were the same and we married somebody just like us, you'd just be a thicker half flesh. There'd be some things missing. I need my opposite. My wife is a high-end relationship intellectual. I'm a disciplinarian. And so at parenting, we needed each other. And when I would send one of my kids to bed early for not doing what they're supposed to do in the morning, and she'd say, you need to go in and sit on the side of her bed. Oh, relationship is not part of the consequence. Yeah, become one flesh. And the man and his wife were both naked and they felt no shame. It's a bigger naked than physical naked. Yes, they were naked, Adam and Eve. But the physical naked is I finally have somebody I can open my chest and share me, my fears, my worries, are we going to be okay? Yeah, it's such an interesting. So he starts in Colossians 3:18, wives, submit to your husbands as is fitting for those who belong to the Lord. Now, fitting is interesting. Fitting and submit are in every translation. Fitting and submit. It's important to establish that God's marital roles have nothing to do with status, intelligence, or worth. They are simply our job description. I have a job description. She has a job description. And in this process, it doesn't mean she's to be quiet, quite the opposite. She's to have an opinion. She's to speak up. And you know, looking around this room, I mean, I've known some of you guys a lot of years. Actually, your wives are a lot more intelligent than you are. Pretty much the whole room, except for me, everybody else, yeah. So bottom line here, the picture is, Bob, listen to her opinion. And she's supposed to be coaxed for an opinion as we make decisions together and as we talk together. Yeah, because this is a job description. This isn't a status description. Yeah, there is no longer Jew or Gentile, slave or free, male and female, for you're all one in Christ Jesus. We're all the same. We're all the same. We're all the same worth. Yeah, the call for a wife to submit doesn't mean she is to have no opinions. It's so important that she has opinions. And they have to be coaxed out of her. Now, my wife grew up in a home, three boys, all being groomed to be pastors, and Rosemary was groomed to clean their rooms for them. And it was just a very ethnic home, and she as a female was very second class and never spoke up. And it was just hard for me in the early years to get her. What do you think about this? What do you want to do? What do you think about? What do you want to do, Bob? Rosemary, you were a 4.0 all through graduate school, and I'm not sharing my GPA in graduate school. And on and on and on and on, and you, an opinion. And so I had to work to get her to speak her opinions. I could back her off a little bit these days, but I had to work back then in the early days. Doesn't mean that she can't disagree and speak up. Probably the problem here is we haven't learned to disagree agreeably. We haven't learned to embrace. We haven't learned to embrace. She needs to speak up. We need to disagree agreeably. Doesn't mean that they can't come to the same opinion that God is releasing her to trust God's plan with her husband. Now here's the beauty. This is so important. God is releasing her. God is saying to her, you're not his Holy Spirit. In fact, wife, I hold your husband accountable for this decision. This is a great release. Get out of the way. He will be held accountable for the decision he makes here. You've weighed in, you've talked about it. Back off. I hold him accountable. Not because he's smarter. That's just a role. That's just the role that I've set aside for the marriage. Yeah, trust my plan here. Don't be his Holy Spirit. Weigh in, walk away. Yeah, and then it goes down in verse 19 where it says, husbands, love your wives. Well, let me give Colossians. Colossians isn't up there for some reason. Husbands, love your wives and treat them and never treat them harshly. And I want to pop over to Ephesians here because it kind of ends in Colossians here. Husbands, love your wives. How much? How much do I have to love her, Lord? How much am I supposed to? Just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. And the greatest give up, I think, in my opinion anyway, wasn't the cross. The greatest give up was the day he stood up in heaven, took off his crown, took off his robe, and said, I'm going. The greatest give up was, Revelations tells us there's 200 million angels in heaven. Now, angels are not the little fat doughboys on Valentine's cards. They're warriors. They're carrying swords. And so for him to stand up and the angels come to attention because the Creator God, Jesus, stood up, we're going. No, not this time. I'm going alone. And the weeping, they won't receive you. The weeping had to be amazing. But that's how much he loves us. No, I want them in heaven with me. I've got to go be the Passover lamb. I've got to go die. So they'll get it. Yeah, it's a picture here. Husbands, love your wives as much as Christ loved the church. Yeah. And in Ephesians 5:21, it starts even earlier. It says to the wife, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Why do I do these roles? It's part of my worship. Reverence for Christ. Yeah. Wives, submit yourselves to your husbands as you do to the Lord. This is a form of worship. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up. So there's a picture of serving here, my wife, and giving me up. If you're married, very likely, I've not run into too many people who've married somebody just like them, very likely you're married to your opposite. Rosemary, after dinner, doesn't want to do the dishes. I'll get them later. Makes me crazy to not do the dishes, but she doesn't want to do the dishes. And she puts them in the sink, and she says, Bob, I'll get them. Let's just sit. Let's just sit and talk. So we sit and talk for hours, and then we go to bed. And so I wake up every morning at 5, and there's a funny little thing in my world. In my kitchen, we have the coffee pot that she's already set. All I have to do is push the button, the sink that's full of dishes, and the dishwasher. They're all, I don't have to move, they're there. But I'm not gonna do those dishes. If I do those dishes, first of all, if I do those dishes, how will she learn to do dishes? She needs to do those dishes. And then I decide, you know, I'm waiting anyway. Okay, and I remember one time thinking, I'm gonna do the dishes, but I'm putting them on the counter so she sees I did the dishes and she puts, yeah, this is horrible. Oh yeah, no comments from you. And I know I didn't hear an audible voice, then don't do them for her, do them for me. Don't do them for her, do them for me, Bob. But Lord, if I put them in the dishwasher, she's never gonna know. We're never gonna get the don't do them for her, do them for me. Yeah, you've married your opposite. I think he has a smile. Yeah, you did marry your opposite, Bob, because you needed to. Lighten up. Sitting and talking in the evening is more important than anything. Lighten up. Yeah, a husband is to be a servant leader. His decisions and leadership are to be pleasing to Christ and in servitude to his wife. Yeah, I've got a little poster in my office that says, if serving is beneath you, leadership is beyond you. If serving is beneath you, leadership is beyond you. Years and years and years ago, I got to go speak at the annual Chick-fil-A convention in Orlando, and I was very excited. And I'm walking into the Marriott World Hotel and carrying my stuff and go over to the concierge, and he says, I tell him who I am, and he says, okay, and somebody saw me and came up and said, do you want to meet Truett Cathy? And I know in these kind of corporate conventions, I know that means we're going up to an out-of-control penthouse with all kinds of stuff to eat. And I said, yeah, and I start to pull my bag, and he says, leave it right there. And he takes me outside on the sidewalk, and this guy about this tall is helping people with their luggage, Truett Cathy, founder of Chick-fil-A. I thought, wow. So God didn't bless you because of your chicken. He blessed you because of your servant spirit, because of your desire. If serving is beneath you, leadership is beyond you. Yeah. But there's another thing here, and I learned it, and I've used this illustration before also. I learned it from Jim Vigorito when he was here on staff. Dr. Vigorito got his undergraduate at Yale and his PhD at Princeton, clinical psychologist, and he took on the really tough cases here. Total egghead. And we went out to lunch one time, and he made a statement that he just realized that God was not only his father, it was also his father-in-law. And I said, first of all, I'm thinking, this is another one of those lunches where I'm not going to have any idea what we're talking about with this smart guy. What does that mean? He says, well, my wife is a daughter of the king. Daughter of the king. So he's watching how I handle and treat and serve and take care of his daughter. Oh, yeah. Something incredible and inspiring to grasp. I'm married to the daughter of the king. I'm absolutely married to the daughter of the king. Wow. Something radically happened when I started believing this years and years and years ago. We were starving at Sheridan House. I was working 12-hour days. We were a seven-day-a-week program, and so I was 7 days times 12, and loved my marriage, but I had been taught by a pastor, my pastor, that God first, ministry second, marriage third. And that was a whole, Rosemary's dad, who was a pastor, God first, ministry second, marriage third. And I began to process, no, you don't need me to do Sheridan House. I mean, I'm here, but you don't need me. And when I got out of the way and made God first, marriage second, and Sheridan House third, is when he began blessing here. Because I was stressed that I have to find the money. I have the stress that I have to find the things we need. And when I realized I don't, and I realized it's almost like God saying, little boy, when you get out of the way, I'll fix it. But as long as you think you're it, the Messiah. Now here's the problem that especially guys in the ministry have. When God gives them success and success and success, then you start taking credit for that success. And then you start doing seminars on how to be successful in the ministry. And then you start deserving things or deserving her or deserving whatever. And then all of a sudden, success is one of the most dangerous things for the ministry. Unless you've got enough people around you to speak into your lives, give God the glory. You know, it's that second favorite verse for me. Unto him who's able to do exceedingly and abundantly beyond all we would ask or imagine. Verse 21 in Ephesians. To him be glory forever and ever, amen. Not you, Bob. But you're right, that was a good point. You gonna speak out loud anymore? So I'm ready for you. Yeah, it goes on though. It goes on in Ephesians 5:26. To make her holy, husband, to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word. What does that mean? I'm to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with the water through the word. I think it's how I view her. Also, for some reason, Jesus views me sinless because of what he did. I'm completely flawless in the eyes of God, completely sinless because he paid for it. So, Bob, why do you seem to point out things in her, see her perfect? And you, my friend, do a great job of that, Bill Gruntler. Perfect. And it's not an issue of whether she's meeting my needs or not. I didn't take vows till needs do us part. Period. So how do I see her? How do I see her? To make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word. Bob, don't view her flaws. Everybody's human. View her like I view you, son. I know everything you think about. I mean, I've often thought we would think and work hard at thinking differently if he put a flat screen that just kind of hung over our head and everywhere we went was the flat screen and every thought we had, everyone else could see. And it would be like, wow. It's interesting. We were talking yesterday with your sister, who's awesome, by the way. And I made the statement, and I'm surprised it surprised her, that the hardest thing for me when I came to Christ was my mouth. I had such a foul mouth. And I know she wanted to ask, do you any more? And I said, it doesn't get to here, but it somehow pops up here, some of those words, which means Jesus knows. You didn't have to say it. He heard it. He heard it. Bob, Bob. And it's you just saying, cleansing by reading, by reading, by studying, by studying. And I long since realized that these Bible studies aren't for you. They're for me. And that Jesus used my ego, instead of having a 10 or 15 minute devotions in the morning, having an hour in the morning, because I got to get ready for this, because I got to sound good. And, you know, you wake up and you realize, whoa, this is for me. This, especially this lesson is for me. How do you view her? Do you forgive her like he forgives you? Contrary to our cultural thought about marriage, my wife does not exist to meet my needs. I am to lead and serve her as a form of my worship of Christ, even when that calls for personal sacrifice. Because over 40 years of counseling, I can't tell you how many times I've heard a guy say, she's just not meeting my needs. I would expect a toddler to say that, maybe about their mom. Yeah, they don't get a good answer from me on that one. She wasn't created to meet your needs. I know the culture says that. And unfortunately, other cultures, that's why they have 5 and 6 wives. No, this is a become over a period of time, sand off each other's rough edges and slowly become one flesh, one person in the functioning. Yeah, it's Romans 12:1. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice. It's an offer. Living. Every day, every day, every day, every day. Living sacrifice. Holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. I've said this too many times, but I don't believe my worship is in church. I believe my praise, my learning from the pulpit, my praise time, that's in church. My worship's out there, starting with my wife, by offering it up. How can I serve? How can I serve? How can I serve? Holy and pleasing to God. Yeah. He goes on in Ephesians to talk, if you're interested, to talk a lot more about what we're supposed to do here. We're supposed to give it up. Too often in church we focus on submission of her, sacrifice of us. Yeah. How I lead, serve, and sacrifice for my wife is perhaps the greatest testimony of my faith in Christ. It's not an issue of what's in it for me. It's an issue of what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to serve? Yeah, it's like me taking 2 sandwiches home to her afterwards that you and Armando brought. Of course, I do tell her I buy them. I didn't tell her they're free, but anyway, driving them home to her. Yeah, it goes on, it goes on, it goes on. It doesn't stop with the husband and wife. This one's very interesting to me. Verse 20. Well, let me read verse 20 first. Verse 20, children, always obey your parents, for this pleases the Lord. Jump down to Ephesians in this passage. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Then the very next verse in Ephesians walks away from the children word and says, honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise. Don't know this for a fact, but I do believe it's talking about 2 different kinds of children. I think children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right, is for children, when we're still little children. And then as we become adults, honor your father and mother. Doesn't mean obey them anymore. It means honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise. And watching the shift for me, came to Christ as a young adult. My dad didn't come to Christ until he was 90 on his deathbed, and he came to Christ because 8 years prior to that, Roby was a little boy and had written him a letter and sharing the gospel, and Roby owned my dad. And when my dad, he hadn't looked at, as far as I know, in 8 years, and when my dad was dead, and they called me, get up here right away, and my dad's lying in a hospital bed in his house, holding the letter in this one hand, which was God's gift to me to say, he's here. He's here. He's here. I didn't get it at the moment. My dad said, do not do a service for me in a church. I don't want it in a church. And I did it anyway in a church because he's gone, and did it at Boca Raton Community Church, and probably 100 plus pastors showed up, and we're walking out, and Hawkins from First Baptist said, you know, that letter was from God to you, not your dad to you. I said, what do you mean? He says, that was God telling you. Your dad's in heaven. But prior to that, he couldn't stand the fact that I was a Christian. And he was mad at God because my mom was a Christian and my mom died when I was 16. And so I remember when I was getting ready to buy my first house over in Hollywood Hills, this little 1,100 square foot house, and I didn't have enough money. I was working here, didn't have enough money. And I asked my dad, could I borrow $2,500? And my dad was a multi-millionaire. And he said, are you still doing that stupid 10% thing at your church? And I said, yes, I am. He said, you don't need help from me. But I realize now two things. My dad was trying, from his perspective, to wake me up. Wake up, Bob. You're going to wake up. But the other thing, it was God, from God's perspective, pushing me. That's your dad. I'm your father. That's your dad. I'm your father. And we had a season where we didn't do well together. And during that season, I was doing a Bible study on Ephesians and got to this. Honor your father and mother. And I wasn't honoring them, him. And I had to honor him even when we disagreed. And if anybody in the Christian world fell and made it into some newspaper article, it'd be waiting for me when I arrived at his house. He wanted me to, one of your people fell again. And I had to learn how to be. And I didn't know, but Rosemary sometimes, pre-children, when we were driving up to his house up in Fort Lauderdale, she'd be praying for me. She says, because it's like you walk in with an easy button. He pushes it, and you two go at it, and we leave early. And then honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise. Yeah, it's a call. It's a call. When I'm an adult, obey, no, but honor. I have to honor. Next one is children. Colossians, fathers, do not aggravate your children, or they will become discouraged. Do not aggravate your children. How do you aggravate your children? Any thoughts on that? By not valuing their opinion, even if we disagree with it. I want to teach my child how to have an opinion rather than the culture form their opinion. It's exactly right. We're a performance enhancement culture. Parents think that everything is the report card and the soccer field, rather than just be together, hang together, go do something together. And so from kindergarten on, I took one at a time children out to lunch, out to breakfast before school. Take them out to breakfast, go back and get the other one, drive them to school. And Tori was easy. And Rosemary would have to say to me, just listen. Because from kindergarten on, she was incredibly opinionated. And just listen. And we learned really how to do well. Roby couldn't talk. I don't know what was wrong with him. The five-year-old would sit across the table and just kind of stare at me, and so we had to get the meal and go for a drive. I learned, okay, he's got to be doing something at the same time, and eat the meal driving and ask him questions, and slowly he started to have opinions, and we've got to encourage them in the right areas, not just applaud them when they kick soccer goals. You're right, and not constantly criticize. Not constantly criticize. And when I see any effort, Roby is OCD. Everything is perfect in his world, all lined up. Tori is not close, and they shared a bathroom. Yeah. And Roby would come down the hall, Dad, would you talk to her? Her stuff's on the floor, towels on the floor. And I almost did, and Rosemary said, Roby, why don't you go talk to her? That won't do any good. Why don't you go talk to her? And what I had to do is keep an eye on the bathroom after Tori used it first, and if anything was improved, all of a sudden the towel wasn't on the floor. It was hanging. It was hanging horribly, but it was hanging. I had to go, no, that's great, you hung the towel up. Thank you for that. Well, you make me. Well, you hung the towel up. Thank you. We have to find things to encourage. And can I say, for those of you that have children and grandchildren right now, this is the worst time I've ever seen for children. It's horrible out there. And little girls aren't beautiful enough, and little boys don't do well enough. They don't have to, they shouldn't have to do. And they need so much touch. They need so much, especially daughters, need so much touch. So bottom line, fathers, don't aggravate your children. I aggravate them when they have to go someplace else to get encouragement. When all I do is criticize them. They have to go online or wherever to get encouragement. My job is to be their greatest fan. So I arranged speaking around Roby's soccer season when he was in high school. He was a great soccer player. And so I didn't miss any games. But I went to the airport once to catch a plane, and the plane was canceled because there was a plane that went down in Chicago, and that's where I was ending up. And so I came back, and they rescheduled it for Friday, which is when his soccer. So I was going to miss the game. I was devastated. And so I went to the airport, and then I called Bat Lillian from the airport and said, call him and tell him I can't come. She said, Bob, I can't. They've got two other speakers. I'll be okay. And I went to the soccer game over at Westminster Academy and got there about halfway through the game. And I'm very, 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 very loud at games. And I used to keep a card with the numbers and all the names of all the other boys on this thing. And all of a sudden, I'm there. And all of a sudden, I see the coach watching the field. He turns around. And Roby all of a sudden is running down my side waving. And the coach came over to me after the game. He said, do not miss another game. He plays differently when you're here. And I thought, wow. Do they feel like we're their biggest fan? So important. Yeah. It's an interesting thing, post-World War II study, on how parenting changed radically. Prior to World War II, your children worked with you. You know, if you had a family-owned store or a family-owned restaurant or a farm or whatever, and we were together a lot. And then all of a sudden, post-World War II, mom went to work, or actually they stayed working, they worked during World War II, and all of a sudden we spend so much less time with our children. We got to change that. Yeah, I am to be my child's greatest encourager. My child's greatest encourager. And that goes with grandchildren too. One of the things that's such a blessing to me is that God took the time to give us these instructions, which means we have to take the time to listen to them, starting with our wives. It's so encouraging to see that God our Father has instructions in His Word to us for how to handle every area and relationship in our lives. That's because He loves us. He wants us to succeed. He plans for us to succeed. But can I say, the evil one does not want you to succeed. The evil one does not want your key relationships to succeed. And so if I find myself getting emotionally and spiritually lazy every now and then I just start pointing. How that irritates me when she does that, when she says that, when she buys that, whatever it is. Stop. This is your greatest form of worship. Present yourself as a living and holy sacrifice. In view of God's mercy to you, Bob, is this too much to ask? Yeah, this is your greatest act of worship. Sacrifice.